The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Hey, we're good to have you here today. It's the passionate radio show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. This is Youth the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen. Thanks for listening today. Dr. Mike's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I'm Joe Galewski. Dr. Deb Lonser will be rejoining us soon to reach the show today, 877-711-5211. Or on the email at udocs.com, youdocs at gmail.com. We're streaming at gabradio.com, and RadioMD is where you can listen to us anytime. If you want to hear a part of the show that you missed or rehear something that you thought was interesting and would like to hear it again, radiomd.com, as we are podcast. Hello, Dr. Mike.
Hello, Joe.
Turning
a lot of good stories in the week.
Yeah, a lot going on in this. A lot going on in this hour. 34 past the hour, our guest will be a very interesting guest who trains dogs to become service dogs. Her name is Janice Wolf, founder of Merlin's Kids. That's a nonprofit agency that rescues and rehabilitates shelter dogs and then trains them to become service dogs for kids with special needs, autism, cerebral palsy, developmental disabilities. So she's our guest at 34 past the hour. We'll be doing a real age tip of the week in this first hour. Have you planned something for that yet?
Yes, it is, are mammograms overrated? That is, when should you really get a mammogram? What do you do with the results? And are there too many false positive diagnoses, and how do you get rid of those?
A lot of tests that we are told to be, necessary to, track things are coming more under that kind of microscope, aren't they? The mammogram and the colon test and the prostate exam. We're getting a lot of re-examination of these tests.
We are getting re-examination, but the key thing is that re-examination, just like making vaccines better and safer, has made the mammogram better and safer, and is now making other tests such as colon screening better and safer. We aren't there yet on PSAs. We don't quite have the answer for prostate screening yet.
We have a lot to cover in this show. Dr. Gary Ginsberg in the second hour, Dr. Arthur Perry in the second hour, two real age tips, some of the top medical news of the week. They're all very interesting. Dr. Mike in the show will talk about the top nutrition trends for 2013, some pretty stark findings on health for Americans under the age of 50, effectiveness of PAP tests, effectiveness of therapy for suicidal teenagers. One thing I did on my morning show here in Syracuse this week, talked to an app developer who talked about this app, Facebook app, which can help you place the blame on somebody who made you sick, somebody who gave you the flu. I'm not sure what the end-all result of that is, but it's kind of interesting, interesting story. And diet soda might be linked to something you don't want, so a lot going on. In this particular show, as far as the top medical news stories of the week,
this one surprised me about the diet soda. I did not know that about diet soda. Hadn't seen anything on this cause, this condition being caused by diet soda. We don't know whether it's cause and effect or just association, but it looked like pretty strong data. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, that'll be. We'll get to that at 20 past the hour. One of our top medical stories of the week. One of the top medical stories of the week concerns the FDA, and they're going to require what, lower recommended dosages for sleep drugs? What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, this is one of the classes of drugs that was developed in the early 1970s, late 1960s, early 70s. That is the benzodiazepines and Ambien, and they were tested in prisoners. It was the last drugs allowed under the before the Kefauver Amendment in Kefauver Kennedy, I think it was in 1972, where they changed the rules for how you test. And the way prisoners got their smoking money and their change was they would get, if they participated in a drug study, the longer they stayed in the study, the more money they got. So they got paid money each week for staying in the study. But when they quickly found out that when they had a complication, such as they were groggy or dizzy or were falling down, if they told the doctor about that, then they would not be kept in the study. They were dropped out. That was a side effect, and that was the highest dose, and that's how dose ranging. So they kept going up in dosage with these prisoners. And obviously the prisoners who were groggy the next day never told anyone, because then they would have gotten dropped out of the study. So almost all of the benzodiazepine data was in male prisoners, which might be considered a hardy lot since they induce their liver with drugs beforehand many times. And secondly, that these guys got paid for staying in the study, so they always, as they went up in dosage, would deny side effects such as dizziness or hangover or confusion. And that's why we got one, that there are two things that came from that. One is a lot of the drugs approved in that era, including the benzodiazepines, including Ambien, one of the main sleeping medicines, were approved in too high a dosage. And the second thing is we learned we should never have pay by the week and prisoners involved in studies.
Yeah. Do we do much testing with...
So believe it or not, these are drugs that are approved that long ago.
Yeah.
Or where the studies were done that long ago that are still commonly used.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that Valium and Cortazepoxide and Ambien and... Lorazepam, all of these have had to have decreased dosage compared to what was first approved.
Yeah, we do a lot of testing on animals. Do you do much on prisoners?
No more.
It
was outlawed in that 1972 law, which I think took effect in various phases in through 1975.
Right, because you're not going to get probably accurate results from people who are... wanting to stay in the program to keep their cigarettes coming or however they get paid.
Or the spending money coming
in. Are we talking about sleeping pills?
These are all sleeping pills.
Yeah.
And the common ones, and believe it or not, they even after that, they didn't realize the per week problem for a while with volunteers. So a lot of the drugs approved through the early 1990s, and no one's gone back and redone the approval studies, because those are very tough studies to do, expensive studies to do. So no one's gone down, gone back, which means we've had higher doses, and finally the FDA spotted that with the sleeping pills and have reduced the dose, especially for women.
How addictive are they, sleeping pills? Is it difficult to get off them once you're on? My mom takes one and can't seem to get off them.
Right. What happens is your brain gets used to them. Mm-hmm. So you should never use a sleeping pill for more than 2 weeks.
Oh, my.
And then when you and go off it, because your brain gets used to it, it stops making its own neurotransmitters. It's a roundabout way. So there's a really good program, and I'm going to tell people it's a really wonderful program that the Cleveland Clinic has on its website, clevelandclinicwellness.com or clevelandclinic.org/wellness. But clevelandclinicwellness.com said go to sleep, which really improves the efficiency, meaning the more you sleep, a higher percentage of the time you're in bed. But it has a nice app with it that you can record your sleep, and I think the app on the iPhone is $199 just to learn how to record what you're doing.
But 2 weeks, though, that's the max you should be on a sleeping pill?
Yes.
I'm sure there are
really
people
a temporary
that...
thing. No. It's one of the highest medications prescribed to working employers and employees in the United States.
I'll bet. All right, coming up after the break, what diet soda may do to you. And some of the other top medical news stories of the week as well. And what are some of the top nutrition trends for 2013? That all coming up after the timeout on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. Thanks for listening today.
Great Start Life Insurance, offered by Guaranty Trust Life Insurance Company, ensures the insurability of your child. Now, what does that mean? Well, too often people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards precludes them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. By insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your child, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out about the rates and all the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com, enter the station's call letters, and as a thank you for applying, we'll give you a free non-insurance prescription discount card, good for substantial savings on prescriptions and other medical tests. Keep and use the discount card even if you should cancel your Great Start Juvenile Life Insurance policy. The free discount card is not insurance, and discounts are available only at participating pharmacies. The discount medical plan organization providing this discount card is Vantage America Solutions, Inc. Ensure the insurability of your child and check out the Great Start Plan. Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranty Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois. Peace of mind. Now at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Tour de Cure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Tour de Cure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Brought to you by Morning and Night Multivitamins and UBeauty.com. Guest time at 34 past the hour, a woman who rehabilitates shelter dogs and trains them to become service dogs for kids with special needs, the Lady Dog Whisperer. And she's also New Jersey's Dog Whisperer. Unique abilities with dogs with behavioral issues. And she has rehabilitated over 25,000 dogs. She can take mine today because I took mine.
What's that? You have that special kind of dog? I mean, she has a a Rhodesian Ridgeback,
which
have special personalities, I've been told.
Yep. Well, she can take mine today and, you know, take them for a couple of days.
My sister and brother-in-law have one, and he's the nicest, most amenable dog I've ever seen.
Yeah, some are, some aren't.
Elegant dogs.
I saw a bumper sticker when we were driving back from Florida a couple of weeks ago. It had to be a dog trainer on the back of the vehicle. The bumper sticker said, dog training, it's not the dog, it's the owner. So I think that's pretty interesting. It's not necessarily training the dog, but it's training the owner to be disciplined enough to make the dog do the right thing. Anyway, that'll be 34 past the hour. Flu cases are slowing down, but threat is still real. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. You know, New York declared an emergency afterwards. If you look at remember, just so people know, we've been saying about every 2 weeks, starting October 28th, that this looked like the worst flu season on record since vaccines were available, and to, in fact, get your flu shot. And we've been advising people. I'll tell you our update for another prediction, if you will, today, later on. But it was pretty obvious from google.org/flu trends and the number of people getting immunized way back in the last week of October that we were going to be at a very high rate. And it's continued. And if you look at it today, which I have, you just go to google.org flu trends and then get the United States, it is by far the worst since the 13 years that Google has tracked it, but it's in the worst that we can find since the 1960s when vaccines were first offered. So this is a high level, and every state is intense. The problem is only a third of people have been immunized against the flu, actually 35.6%, which means everyone, it's more likely to spread. I think we still got, I'm a little worried that the cases are only slowing because they're not being reported, because everyone knows how bad a season it is. And in fact, we're not slowing down our flu rates enough. So I think we may have another couple weeks of higher flu rates till we turn the corner.
I think there are three states I've heard earlier today that don't have the problem. California, which is interesting to me. What else? California, Hawaii, and one of the Midwest states or breadbasket states, Missouri, I think. But the other...
No, it was South Dakota.
South Dakota.
But in fact, if you look at those, they look like they're going to get it. Nothing. I mean, Hawaii and Alaska may avoid even worse, but Alaska had the highest rate early on. So Alaska already has been hit with it. Hawaii may avoid it because it's got to be brought in and there's got to be frequent contact. So I don't know about Hawaii, but the other states, it doesn't look good for any of the other states. If you'd looked at this map a month ago, most of the states were in the orange or light, if you will, red. Now they're all, other than California, Nevada, Oregon, Utah, South Dakota, and Virginia, Hawaii, and Alaska, they're now all in the intense red that they haven't been in. Literally, they haven't been in ever before since vaccines.
They say about 36,000 people die every year from the flu. How does somebody go from having the flu to dying? How does that happen?
They get inflammation and pneumonia. They get pneumonia. They then get inflammation in their body. The inflammation causes you to flip off a plaque, meaning you break off a piece of the cholesterol in your artery that goes to the coronary arteries, and you have either a heart arrhythmia, an abnormal heartbeat that kills you, or you just block the artery and it kills you, or it goes to your brain and causes a stroke, or you just develop pneumonia.
Mm. Yeah, 36,000.
The average is 36,000. The guess is that this, although the flu is more common this year, we don't think it is more severe from a death rate standpoint.
Right. Hope we can get through it. Hope we really can. Let's talk about that diet soda. story that diet soda's, you know, been in the news because it's been linked to a lot of different problems if you drink it. Now, what's the latest about drinking diet soda?
This was a very interesting study, if you will, in that it associated diet soda drinking with depression. Now, you'd say, why would you get sad? Why would these people? And it looked at a large number of people over a large number of years. It's a Norwegian study for the entire population of Norway. As opposed to coffee, if they drank a lot of coffee, they were less likely to get depressed. So it isn't the caffeine or even the amount of caffeine. It was something in the diet drink itself that was associated with and if you had four cans a day, it was associated with a 50% increase in your risk for depression.
Wow. I don't know what's better. Is it diet soda better or regular soda better? Sugars and regular soda, that'll kill you.
The regular soda it was just as bad. Yeah. This is all soda is bad. Just stay with coffee or water.
Yeah. And energy drinks. I mean, other than I can't imagine, you know, you've got the energy drinks. That's caused all sorts of problems as well. And the Gatorades or, you know, whatever you use to replenish when you work out. It seems to me the only safe beverages are coffee and water, right?
They're not only safe, but they're healthy. Coffee is associated with a lower risk of depression, lower risk of memory disorders, if you will, even a lower risk of cancers. Nine different cancers are decreased by coffee, or at least are associated with a decrease in prevalence when you have coffee. So coffee seems to be a very good thing rather than just a neutral thing.
Well, let's qualify, though, coffee black, right? Not the coffee with the...
Absolutely coffee black, right?
Accoutrements.
With the added sugar and all the other junk in it.
Accoutrements. And how many cups a day would be A-okay to do?
If you like coffee, there are four side effects of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Heart arrhythmias, abnormal heartbeats, gastric upset, anxiety, and migraine headaches. And if you don't have one of those, the more coffee you have, the better. And the optimum looks like you hit the optimum with 6 8-ounce cups a day of regular black coffee.
How come we don't talk much about tea?
Well, tea is there is a tea equivalent, and it looks like tea is just as good as caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have, and the reason we don't talk as much about tea is twofold. One, people expect tea to be healthy.
Yeah.
And secondly, and this is an interesting thing, people expect it to be healthy. And the second one is that there is a tea-coffee equivalence that makes it likely that tea is as good, but we just don't have as enough data.
It's kind of like the unappreciated beverage, tea, right? Although
well,
it does say it's
very appreciated in a lot of other countries, you know, Canada, Great Britain, et cetera. It's very appreciated.
Yeah, you get a lot of the countries that really rely on that to remain healthy. There's all sorts of different kind of teas that they use. So we very rarely talk about it. We talk about diet sodas and energy drinks and coffee and whatnot, but tea is something we don't seem to spend much time on, but it's got its benefits as well.
Almost exactly the same benefits as coffee.
Yeah, very good. udocs@gmail.com on the email. Next up is guest segment time. The woman who trains shelter dogs to become service dogs for kids. Interesting topic. We'll get to that after the break. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours. all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Snowboarding is a popular winter sport. Snowboards look like big skateboards made from fiberglass and plastic. Snowboarders ride their boards much the way surfers do, steering by shifting their body weight. Most can reach speeds up to 40 miles per hour. Twice as many injuries happen to snowboarders as skiers. The most common injuries are to the wrist, usually when snowboarders use their arms to break a fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend this sport for children under age 7. For older children, make sure the snowboard fits the child. An easy way to determine this is to make sure the board stands no higher than the child's nose. Children should always wear helmets and gloves with built-in wrist guards, and they should resist trying advanced stunts or dangerous tricks until they've mastered all the basic snowboarding skills. And for more information on your child's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's one thing to have a job in this economy, but it's another to have a career that you love. Getting the skills for today's careers may depend on your college degree. So if you're interested in the future of business, electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, call ITT Technical Institute today. With over 100 campuses nationally, ITT Tech can prepare you for a career in one of these fields. After all, tens of thousands of ITT Tech grads have built a solid future. Perhaps they can do the same for you. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. So what's stopping you? For more information and to schedule your campus tour, call ITT Tech toll-free at 800-574-1319. That's 800-574-1319. ITT Technical Institute, education for the future. 800-574-1319.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes, March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are Dr. Mike, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galuski.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week in the first hour in 15 minutes or so. Guest time on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Janice Wolf is the founder of Merlin's Kids. It's a nonprofit agency that rescues and rehabilitates shelter dogs and trains them to become service dogs for kids with special needs. She's a lady dog whisperer and New Jersey's dog whisperer, and she's known for her unique abilities with dogs with behavioral issues. Janice, we're glad you're with us here today on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. What is a service dog? How do you define a service dog?
A service dog is a dog who helps, usually it's one person, like we all are used to seeing eye dogs and hearing dogs. We're not usually used to seeing service dogs that are for people who have developmental delays or disorders or for other people. But really a service dog is a dog that helps you to do something that you can't do on your own. So for instance, a child with, let's say, autism who has a hard time transitioning or who is a flight risk, it can actually assist that child and actually prevent that child from running off and even help that child to live in our world a little bit easier. And the dog helps the child.
Now, you don't train dogs, you rehabilitate dogs. What's the difference?
Well, I do train them to be service dogs, but I do not train private dogs. I have, and we have a company called United Canine Professionals that actually is our sister company, which trains people to rehabilitate dogs, and then some people make careers out of it, and we have a number of people. We have many people around the country who do that. So that is rehabilitating dogs. Let's say someone has a dog that's, you know, having accidents, quote-unquote, in the house, or is jumping on grandma, or even who is aggressive. We rehabilitate those dogs and change the behavior by changing the behavior of the humans so that the dog doesn't feel that he's got to provide and protect.
Yeah,
and feel that he's provided for and protected.
And Janice has rehabilitated 25,000 dogs, so she knows what she's doing. Here's Dr. Mike.
Now, how did you get the idea? Well, I've got so many questions. So first, how did you get the idea to do this with children with developmental disabilities?
Well, I've been involved with special needs kids since I was a kid myself, and I've noticed that horses and dogs and many animals have an ability to connect with children more so than humans do. And the great thing about animals is they're not judgmental. They don't care what you're wearing. They don't care if you smell, and as a matter of fact, they might like you better if you do. But their energy is so much more superior to humans because they don't have an ulterior motive. They don't look for what they can get from us. They look what they can give to us. So a lot of these dogs, and 95% of the dogs we placed as service dogs actually started out in shelters and rescues, and many of them would have been euthanized had we not taken them out of the shelters and rescues.
Now, so most of these dogs are from the shelters, but you also have a special thing with a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Yeah, that would be Wyatt.
Yeah, well, Wyatt is the one that's Wyatt the one who started the process?
No, he's not, but his mother is. His mother is I just lost this past year, beautiful Ridgeback. She actually won at Westminster and the Ridgeback National Specialty and a lot of different awards, but she had that ability to connect with children. And Wyatt is actually one of her sons. So Wyatt has a unique ability, and even more so than any dog I've ever seen. He just intuitively understands what the child needs and when the child needs it. And so I go into a home with Wyatt, who is now 4 years old, and by the way, when he was only two in 2010, he won something called the American Kennel Club's AKC ACE Award, and he was a top service dog at age two, youngest ever in the history of the award. And he's so remarkable that when we go into a home or we go into a situation, I base my judgments for whether or not child is a good candidate for a service dog, and if so, what kind. I base it on Wyatt and his unique abilities and his connection with the child to determine whether or not that child will be suitable. So,
meaning
actually,
that if the child... Can you help me with that? You mean if the child does not get along with Wyatt, he's unlikely to get along or work through with any other dog?
Chances are, yes. Wyatt is very tolerant. Wyatt has been poked and prodded and kicked and bitten. He actually finished his championship when he was a puppy with a big welt on his neck from a little boy who had bitten him pretty hard, and he had this giant welt on his neck. He's amazing. Let's say a child, for instance, is running at him. He'll just trot away until that child calms down. And as soon as the second that child calms his energy, Wyatt will come over and engage him. If the child tries to hurt him, he won't hurt the child back. Of course, he'll just walk away until the child calms down. If the child is fearful, he'll actually lay with his back to the child, maybe 15 or 20 feet away. And every few minutes as the child comes down, you can see Wyatt will come closer, but always with his back to the child, until eventually the child is sitting on the floor petting him. So it's pretty amazing to watch.
And now one of the things, how many of the dogs that you place with disabled children with children with developmental disabilities, I should say, are the Ridgeback versus how many are others? You've rehabilitated an awful lot of dogs with behavior problems, and so we'll get into that in a second, but how many of the dogs children with issues have you had the opportunity to place dogs with?
Well, we do per year. We've had years with 60. We had our biggest year with 61 in 1 year. The biggest problem is, of course, financing. You know, we don't charge parents at all. So actually, you know, it's expensive. It costs me between about $6,000 to $8,000 to place a dog. Right now, for instance, we have a beautiful little poodle, standard poodle up in Texas, who had a reaction to his shot and he's been dying. He's 8 months old. We're taking donations for him because he's already supposed to be placed with a little girl named Eliza, who's been on our list. And so, you know, you have those situations like that. But for the children with autism, I use almost exclusively the Ridgebacks because they're extremely perceptive. They're very tolerant, and they know naturally and intuitively what should and shouldn't be done. So we don't use certain breeds that are going to be more dominant. The typical breeds we see that we think of as being dominant breed dogs because, you know, we can trust. I always joke, I can kid-proof my dog, but I can't dog-proof your kid. So, you know, it's a little tough. But I'd say with the autistic children, especially lower functioning, probably 90% are Ridgebacks. With other developmental delays and disorders, perhaps maybe 50%. But we do a lot of poodle mixes, and it's not really about the breed. We do a lot of Cavalier King Charles. We'll do a mixed breed dog as long as the dog has the qualities and characteristics that we're looking for that particular child whom we're looking for a dog for.
And now let me go. So you've rehabilitated a lot of dogs that aren't Ridgebacks. How do you do that? Oh, yeah. How much time do you have to spend with the dog versus how much time do you spend with the owner?
Okay, great question. Those dogs, those were not all placed as service dogs. Those were dogs who call me like I'm in Phoenix, Arizona right now, and I'm going to be working with probably about 15 or 20 dogs who have issues out here. We're going to the shelter. I might be working with 50 dogs at the shelter in a two-day period. The dogs that we rehabilitate that have any aggression, anything whatsoever, have ever snarled or growled, even though I can fix anything, and I fixed some pretty severely aggressive dogs that most people would never even have wanted to go near. But the dogs that we use, the Merlin's kids,
we're going to talk more about this when we come back. Joe?
All right, Dr. Mike, Janice Wolf, the founder of Merlin's Kids, she rescues and rehabilitates shelter dogs and trains them to become service dogs for kids with special needs. Interesting story. More with Janice and Dr. Mike coming up. After the timeout, you, the Owner's Manual radio show with Dr. Michael Roizen.
Fresh Healthy Vending, the most successful healthy vending machine business in the nation, is now seeking franchise partners. For the first time in your community, Fresh Healthy Vending is looking to launch its highly successful, profitable, and innovative vending concept. Here's how it works. Own your own route of bright, colorful, high-tech, healthy vending machines that offer a range of natural, organic, and healthy snacks and drinks. Yogurts, fresh fruit, juices, smoothies, fruit cups, iced tea, and more. Over 500 healthy products to choose from. These machines will be placed for you by Fresh's professional team of location specialists. Your machines will be making money in schools, businesses, retailers, hospitals, and other profitable locations throughout your community. Securing the most profitable locations for our franchise partners is Fresh Healthy Vending's number one goal. Own your own money-making vending business opportunity. Minimum investment, $80,000. Go to FreshVending.com for the full story. That's FreshVending.com. FreshVending.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody. So get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. While planning gifts for your children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews this holiday season, don't forget about toy safety. Toys need to match a child's abilities, so always check the manufacturer's age recommendations on the toy first. In general, toy parts should be much larger than the child's mouth to prevent injuries, including choking. To avoid serious eye or ear injuries, steer clear of toys that shoot small objects into the air or make loud noises. The eyes, nose, and other small parts on soft toys and stuffed animals should be securely fastened. If a toy comes with instructions, make sure you read and demonstrate them to the child and make sure she understands the proper way to use the toy. And note, never buy hobby kits such as chemistry sets for any child younger than 12. For more tips on keeping your holidays safe with your children and family, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
And now, back to Dr. Michael Roizen, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galewski on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Janice Wolf is a part of a nonprofit agency that takes and rehabilitates shelter dogs, trains them for use for kids with special needs. A few minutes left with her, and here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
Now, where we were was, how much time do you spend with the owner versus the dog when you rehabilitate a behavior problem dog?
Okay, great question. Typically, it takes around 10 to 20 minutes to rehabilitate the dog. Obviously, then you have to continue that on. Much as if somebody would go to a doctor, how long does the appointment take? They work, do a workup, they check on you, and then they say, okay, we'll take this medication for the next 2 weeks. And then you leave it up to the owner or the human. So same thing. It can take 20 minutes with the dog, and it can take hours with the human, because the human is doing something that's creating the behavior in the dog. Even if it's a rescue and perhaps that person didn't create the problem, that person didn't know how to solve the problem.
Gotcha. Now, you've also got a set of books. One, this is a nonprofit. And the nonprofit is at merlinskids.org, and there is a donation area there. So you also have a series of books here that are being done relating to your work.
Yes, actually, my good friend Dr. Temple Grandin is writing a foreword on a number of the books. It's called My Name is Wyatt, and it's a book series about Wyatt's special adventures with these very special children. So it's called My Name is Wyatt, and it follows Wyatt on his adventures with special needs kids, where he sees the kids as adorable, just normal kind of kids, and he sees the world around those children as strange. So there's one book is about a little girl named Emily, and she's got something called Agenesis of the Corpus Callosum. Well, he sees little Emily as a pretty little girl in a pink sweater, but the adults around her give her strange looks and avoid her because they don't understand why she's acting the way she is. So Wyatt is non-judgmental, and this is a part of a book series that hopefully will be in most school systems within a few years, and it's actually in a number of private schools already. So it's really about anti-bullying and tolerance and acceptance and understanding of each other's, you know, special characteristics, but it's a fun storybook. And that's why, you know, each one deals with a different child's issues, from autism to agenesis to cerebral palsy to muscular dystrophy, to all kinds of things, so that people can understand what these kids go through and can learn, can be their friends instead of staring at them.
And now, let me ask you, what percent of kids with issues are you able to find a fit for, if you will? In other words, if 100 kids come to you, and there must be a lot, and obviously it's expensive. We learned that $8,000 to train a dog and child of this type. What percent of kids is Wyatt give thumbs up or paws up to, and what percent don't make it?
Well, the vast majority, I would say about 75% of children are good candidates for service dog, but then we get into the money issue. So if I keep playing lotto and Powerball, praying I'll win so we can get every child a dog. But that hasn't happened yet, so we're still forging along. The children, what would disqualify a child is sometimes the children are too young, they're too aggressive, even though I would still work with them with a volunteer with another dog. You know, you have to be careful because I don't trust kids around dogs. So if I think that a child is not a good fit because of a dangerous situation, or like a little girl who has a very severe bone disorder, if the dog should bump her by accident and she falls, she could really hurt herself. So I don't think situations like that are really good candidates. But assuming we had an unlimited source of income, we could still, we get about roughly 150 per year needing dogs. And unfortunately, we can only fill about 50 of that, and that's just due to funding. So, like I said, anyone has a winning Powerball ticket, please let us know.
Gotcha. Now, there's a series of books, if you will. And one of your dreams, let me go back to one of the dreams, and I don't know whether it's mentioned on the website because I didn't get that far on the website, but one of the dreams is to have a farm where you can, in fact, do this in a more, in a larger scale fashion. Tell us a little bit about that.
Actually, we do have one in New Jersey. It's only 6 acres. We're not going to be able to put the Western theme park in there, but we do a lot of therapies with the children. They do work with the dogs. Actually, out in Phoenix here, looking for someone to donate a chunk of land so that we can do one out here. We're working on one in Texas right now that we're doing, hopefully going to have that something up and running. We've got one up in upstate New York and a place in Florida. These are all, again, having the land is very different from having the money to develop it. And Temple's been wonderful, and she's helping me design them. But, you know, it's the economy right now. We're trying to help children and save dogs, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of people don't even have a job right now, so they can't, you know, can't help us out. But we're still forging along.
Want to thank you very much. The website is again Merlins, Merlins, kids, KIDS, .org. So Merlins without the apostrophe, kids without the apostrophe, .org. Thank you very much, Janice, for being with
us. And you can also call 855 Hi Wyatt is our phone number. 855 Hi Wyatt.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for doing what you do for those kids.
Thank you.
Joe?
Janice Wolf, the founder of Merlin's Kids. Time for a quick Dr. Mike Real Age Tip of the Week.
Now on You, the Owner's Manual, this is the Real Age Tip of the Week with Michael Roizen, M.D.
When to do or not to do a mammogram? That is the question. How frequently and at what age should women begin to get mammograms? Well, it isn't set in stone. Guidelines vary. For example, the American Cancer Society recommends annual mammograms for all women starting at age 40 every year, whereas U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends mammograms for most women every 2 years starting at age 50 through age 75. What do we think? Well, the new study from the Harvard School of Public Health adds fuel to the debate by stating that routine mammograms lead to an overdiagnosis of breast cancer, causing more anxiety than maybe curing it. And the problem is that a lot of the mammograms in the study were not read by specialists who just read mammograms. And that's because the researchers analyzed data from a study of 40,000 Norwegian women with invasive breast cancer. And if you look at it, it was not all the radiologists participated in it, not just specialists. So a couple of things you should do. One is make sure a specialist is reading your mammogram. Two, if you have dense breasts, talk to them about an MRI or ultrasound to complement it. And three, there are new techniques coming in which make the diagnosis more secure. So go with the newer techniques if you can get to one of those places. Joe?
This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Royson. Hour number two is coming up. Stay with us.